Welcome back to Comment with me, George Galloway. We need your calls, we need your SMS, and we need your emails. We're talking about, well, almost everything under the sun. Jeff in London's on the line. He wants to talk about Egypt. Jeff, welcome to the show, my friend.
Hi, George. Thanks for taking my call.
Welcome,
Jeff in the UK.
Thanks.
It was 28 minutes past the hour, George, and I was just hoping and praying you'd carry on talking so I could talk after the break.
Okay, go on.
About Egypt, I actually agree, George, with what you had to say right at the beginning of the show. It's the thing that concerns me the most, actually, this idea that the authorities, the Western powers, the Egyptian army, they've got what they wanted, really, in the polarity of this election between Ahmed Shafiq and Mohamed Morsi.
He's the weakest, you see. Morsi is the weakest candidate that Shafiq could have stood against. If he'd had to stand against the gentleman I was myself supporting, Dr. Abou Fatou, he would have lost in a landslide. And if he'd been fighting my old friend Hamdine Sabahi, he would have also lost in a landslide. The one chance that Shafiq has of credibly being declared the winner is against Dr. Morsi.
Yes, but even then, George, I mean, if you'd asked me a few weeks ago who was the weakest candidate of the lot, you know, before the first round of the election, I'd have said Shafiq.
Yeah, definitely. No, it was rigged. I'm absolutely certain it was rigged.
I mean, if they can, I look at it this way, if they can make it to look like Shafiq came second in the first round of the elections, they can make it so he comes out first in the second round.
Well, of course, that follows logically. But I think the point is, if they do that, then there will be, and there must be, millions upon millions of people take to the streets of Egypt. Not just in Cairo, but in Alexandria, in Port Said, in every part of the country, don't you think?
I do agree. I mean, I also think that the Mubarak's trial, the verdict which came out a few days ago, might help this, because Egyptians are outraged.
Yeah.
I mean, if you actually think about it, Saddam Hussein was executed after a kangaroo trial, and a kangaroo execution at that, for a crime 24 years ago, in 1982, in which 48 people were killed. Mubarak killed 800 or so people only a year ago.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just absolutely...
And nobody was to blame. Neither he, nor the police chiefs. None of them were to blame for the murder of 800 people.
No, and the corruption charges were dropped as well.
Well, and the two sons, the greatest thieves in Egyptian history, were acquitted on the most serious charges.
I know, it's just absolutely ridiculous.
But it may have been a tactical mistake, as you imply, and I agree, because it's actually got the Egyptian people back out of their armchairs and onto the streets again. And if the election is rigged next week, then... that just might lead to an avalanche of revolutionary protest in the country, don't you think?
I do agree with that. That's the only thing on our side. And although, like you said, the Muslim Brotherhood candidate wouldn't have been my first choice either.
Well, he wasn't even the Muslim Brotherhood's first choice. He was their spare wheel.
He was
the guy that they put on the order paper in case their candidate was disqualified, which he was.
Well, hence another absurdity. I mean, the original Muslim Brotherhood candidate, from what I've read, was disqualified because of something to do with his parents' nationality.
Yes, exactly.
Whereas Amr Moussa and Ahmed Shafiq were allowed to stand despite what was supposed to be a complete ban on former Mubarak officials.
Exactly.
I mean, it's just absurd.
You're a smart guy. I hope you call me again, Jeff.
Yeah.
A wonderful call. Thanks for that. Let's go to Gary in London on Palestine, because we are commemorating the 45th anniversary of what we call the Naxa, the conquest of what remained of Palestine in 1967. Gary, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks. George, pleasure speaking with you.
And you, sir. Go on.
I'm interested in your views on two points related to the Nakba. I mean, 65 years ago in 1947, when the United Nations General Assembly passed Resolution 181, better known as the Partition Plan, the direct result was the Nakba, which we remember in May, but really began in November 1947, when the Palestine was still a British protectorate and came to a head in 48. The two-state solution is a term that's still very much in vogue with the US, the UK government, and all Western democracies. However, it's simply Partition Plan by another name. So So my,
well,
my question
a much lesser partition even than
so
that which was envisaged at any time in the last 65 years.
Exactly. So if partition didn't work in 1948, why will it work now by another name?
Well, it wouldn't, and I don't support it. I believe that Palestine is one from the river to the sea, and the Palestinians are one people wherever they live, either in what they call Israel, or under occupation, or under annexation, or under siege, or in refugee camps outside, or in exile around the world. The Palestinians are one people, and the country is one, from the river to the sea. That's my view.
Absolutely. The second point speaks to really the issue that you raised with the previous caller about Middle Eastern democracy. Abbas's elected term ended in January 2009. Elections are continually and conveniently put off, and therefore he really has no democratic mandate to speak for the Palestinians. Isn't it time for the PA to acknowledge that it has no authority, make good on its idle threat to dissolve the PA, and hand the obligations of occupation fully to Israel?
No, I believe that the PA should have an election, and that the political forces in Palestine should test their strength or otherwise in that election. And I believe that the best person to run for the presidency of the Palestine Authority is the leading political prisoner, Marwan Barghouti. I think he's the only man who can bridge the gap between the Islamist and the Arab nationalist and progressive trends and currents within the polity of the Palestinian people. He is, in my opinion, the best leader that the Palestinians have. He's serving 99 years in an Israeli dungeon. But Nelson Mandela was the uncontestable leader of the African National Congress, despite being 27 years in an apartheid dungeon. And moreover, it might force the Arabs and the West, and even the Palestinians themselves, to insist meaningfully on the release of Marwan Barghouti if he was elected as the president. That's my view, Gary. What's yours?
I agree partly, but mine's probably a bit more forthright, which is, wouldn't the dissolution of the PA bring about a single state solution in a single stroke?
No, because the single state would be a single state of occupation, annexation, and siege.
And then Israel would have its hand forced. It would have a choice of either continue on as an apartheid state or recognize the Palestinian people as citizens.
Well, I could assure you which of those choices it would make, Gary. I think you know that.
Yep. But equally, it would bring focus on Israel.
Well, you're more optimistic about that than me. Sorry, mate, I don't agree. Let's go to Zimbabwe and talk to Lucky, as he's known, about Palestine. Lucky, welcome.
Hello, how are you?
I'm very well. I like a man called Lucky. Go ahead.
Yes, I'm calling from Zimbabwe. I want this Palestine, you know, this is a headache for us here in Africa, you know. We are very worried. But now, this is time, an opportunity for a meaningful peace process in Palestine because of the instability in the Middle East. This is an opportunity for the Palestinians to be one, be united. There's too much pressure now for the US and the UK and these so-called superpowers now because of trying to solve these problems and getting into them in the Middle East. So it's time for the Palestinians to grab this opportunity. And
well, I think they're doing everything they can, Lucky. They're starving themselves in hunger strikes. They're marching on the streets and being shot down. They are continuing to resist in Gaza. I think the Palestinians are doing everything that they can. The question is, what about the others? What about the Arabs? What about the Muslims? What about humanity? What are they doing for the Palestinian people?
Yeah, you know, this is the other problem now. We look at the media now, at the media. I think the way these other countries, like, which are not superpowers like Iran, countries like Russia, countries like China, they should take a leading role and invest in the media, invest in these forums.
Well, that's happening. That's happening. More and more alternative media is coming on stream and on track. And you're lucky. that you can watch Press TV, hopefully on television. Lucky, thanks for the call. Let's go to the comment wall and take a couple of emails. Remember, we want your country here. We want your point of view up here on the comment wall. Let's see where the first one is from. Charlie in London. I'm not opposed to the Queen per se, but given the poverty of us as her subjects, I find her lavish lifestyle absolutely disgusting. Why should I not call for her disposition from her throne without insulting her? Why should I have to celebrate her longevity? Why should I accept her as just a symbol? Answer these questions, George. Don't tell me about the government. You don't have to do any of those, Charlie. I don't do any of those. You seem to have misunderstood me. Let's go back to the comment wall and take another email. This one is from unknown Oporo. If the people of Egypt do not vote for Morsi on the second round, then the revolution has failed, and the British government should stop spending taxpayers' money on ancient tradition. Thanks for that, Oporo. Let's go to Saruk in London about Palestine. Saruk, welcome to the show, my friend. I hope we didn't just lose that call, did we? We seem to have. Saruk was on the line about Palestine because it is the 45th anniversary of what we call the Naxa, the event in 1967, the so-called Six-Day War, where the rest of Palestine was lost, most of it having been lost many, many decades before. And Palestine was effectively wiped off the map at that time. Now, Emma's on the line. I don't know what she wants to talk about, but she's more than welcome. Emma, go ahead, please. Emma? Emma, you're on the air.
Hello.
Yes, Emma, go ahead. On the Middle East, in Nigeria. Okay. Emma, go ahead.
Okay, George. It's evening here, so I say good evening.
Good evening. Go ahead.
Yes, I want to talk about the issue of Syria.
Yeah.
This, you know...
Goodness me. We're having some bad luck. That was Emma in Nigeria. Emma, you're on the line. Go ahead.
Hey, I'm suspecting that, you know, this Western country, anything that has to do with Iranians getting close with some of these nations, they feel more...
I'm sorry, Emma. I'm not getting any of that, brother. I'm sorry. We'll try and call you back and establish a clearer line. Emma wanted to talk about the Middle East. So do I. I also want to talk about Britain and the royal family and the vast expenditure of an unknown amount of money, but certainly a lot of money, on what was called the Queen's Jubilee, the 60th anniversary of her accession to the throne. We're talking about Egypt also. But Jonathan is in Birmingham, in London, rather than Alabama, I trust. I don't know what he wants to talk about either, but I want to talk to him. Jonathan, welcome to the show, my friend. I hope we've got a clear line.
Thank you very much.
Go ahead.
Right. My problem is on the Arabs.
Yeah.
That goes with Arabs.
Go on.
Right. The American and the English have been able to fool them on the war on terror.
Go on.
We have roughly about 700,000 Americans die each year on heart attack or heart diseases. Yeah. Roughly 600,000 Americans die of cancer. 500,000 Americans die in car accidents. About 200,000 die in homicides. About 150,000 die from falls. About 40,000 people drowned. Yet these governments are not tackling them as they do in the war on terror. So it is time the Arabs open their eyes and know much about themselves instead of letting the Americans and the Saudis to fool them and disrupt peace in the world.
Okay, that was a good call with some very interesting statistics. I think it was a call for the Americans to open their eyes rather than the Arabs. But good point. Well brought out, Jonathan. Thanks for that. Let's go back to Nigeria. Talk to Mawal about Palestine. Mawal, welcome to the show.
Yeah, good evening, Mr. Galloway.
Good evening, sir. Go on.
Yeah, I'm not Mawal, I'm Lawal.
Okay, I beg your pardon.
L-A-D-A-H-A-N, okay, no problem. So I commend your program, but I want view information from, because I've recently been watching your program. So I want to know your, are you a Muslim or a Christian?
That's none of your business. Go on.
Okay. So, well, I do appreciate what you do for Muslims. But I want to comment on the Arab people generally. Why are there killings in their countries? And I'm so disturbed every time I watch on Press TV, on Al Jazeera, on different platform news, international news, we see killings. Why can't the Assad leave the throne and give peace a chance? Is he happy for how they are killing themselves?
Well, there's quite a bit of killing in Nigeria, Lawal, no?
What did you say, sir?
I said there's quite a bit of killing in Nigeria.
Of course. We understand, but it's not as much as the Arab nations, nationwide. All Arab nations. I'm highly disturbed for women, not even religion or anything. But the way the killing is too much.
Well, I agree it's too much, Lawal. But let me tell you something. On Sunday night and on Monday, I was in Tunisia, the first country to liberate itself from its dictatorship. And I spent a wonderful less than 24 hours there with my friend Sheikh Rashid Ghannouchi, the former political exile here in London, a good friend of mine who is now the leader of the major party, the majority party in Tunisia. And I was very happy to be in a free Tunisia that has driven out its tyranny. And they're not killing each other in Tunisia. And they're not killing each other in most Arab countries, though Western crusaders and their satrapies, the dictators who do their bidding, are killing plenty of them. I'm against anybody killing anybody. And I want everybody to live in peace, in freedom, in democracy, and in plenty. But if you think that the principal problem amongst the Arab people is the existence of one particular regime, namely the Syrian regime, as opposed to other regimes, I think that you're up the wrong track. And I don't know how you've come to the conclusion that you have if you're a regular watcher of Press TV. But thanks for the call, and it was a relatively clear line for a change from Nigeria. Let's try India next, where Mukhtar wants to talk about Palestine. Mukhtar, welcome to the show, my friend.
Hi, George.
Nice. Hi there, go ahead.
George, today being Al-Aqsa Day, I would like to talk about the Israel-Palestinian conflict.
Go ahead.
I mean, I feel that the focus of the peace talks, which was being conducted a few months ago, has just faded, away. Today itself, we saw in the news the increase in settlement activities by Israel on Palestinian lands. I mean, what is the UN doing? What do you think, George? What will make these settlement activities
stop?
Well,
the UN is apparently endlessly fixating about another Arab country next door, apparently oblivious to the fact that they have legal responsibilities to protect the Palestinian people under occupation, apparently oblivious to the fact that for 45 years, the UN Security Council resolutions 242 and 338 have been brazenly and absolutely defied by what they call Israel. And apparently, the United Nations has been absolutely unable to do anything about this brazen 45-year-long lawbreaking. Instead of sanctioning what they call Israel, they have endlessly rewarded Israel. They have allowed Israel to develop hundreds of illegally acquired and stored nuclear weapons, whilst the UN has been apparently fixated over the last few years about another country, Iran, which doesn't have any nuclear weapons at all. You really couldn't make this up, Mukhtar. The UN, don't make me laugh, but thanks for the call. Arnold is in London. He wants to talk about Egypt. So do I. Arnold, welcome to the show.
Yes, I'm in Edinburgh.
in Edinburgh, and I thought you were in London. Please forgive me. Go ahead.
Okay. Yes, I'm going to ask you a question about the treatment of Mubarak. Don't you think that as a statesman, he deserves much better treatment like this?
A statesman, Arnold? He's a murderer, a torturer, a thief.
But do you think that in the case that the rule of law is not being observed in Egypt, such as, you know, the protesters themselves are disregarding what the judiciary is...
But it's the judiciary that was set up by a dictatorship, Arnold.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Hitler had a judiciary. It didn't mean we have to respect what they said, because they'd been set up as the judiciary by a tyrant. Now, Mubarak is not Hitler. Nobody is Hitler, only Hitler. But Mubarak is a murderer, a mass murderer, a mass torturer, a thief on the grandest possible scale. And you describe him as a statesman?
I mean, how comparable is he to Mugabe?
I mean, what planet are you living on? Mubarak, a statesman? Are you joking me? Well, Arnold in Edinburgh appears to have disappeared at that point, which is a pity, because I really would have liked to have explored that subject rather more widely with him. Arnold, I hope it wasn't something I said. We're talking about Egypt, we're talking about the British royal family and the largesse that was lavished on the Jubilee. We're talking about the situation in Palestine. Now, there's a Harry on the line for me. I wonder if it's Prince Harry dragged himself out of one of those clubs in the West End of London that he regularly falls out of, blind drunk at our expense. But it's probably not him. Harry, speak now or forever hold your peace. Quickly, Harry.
Hello. Sagali, God bless you.
Thank
George,
you, brother. Go on.
God bless you very well. God bless you more and more than more.
Thank you, brother.
What I'm trying to tell you about it, people are talking about Egypt and other countries. What of Nigeria that Muslims are dying, people are killing people all the time, nobody talk about? Nigeria, is it not among the people that have the human rights? If you can go to Kano, you see more than 2,000, 5,000 people are dying. You go to other places like Maiduguri, you see people are dying.
Well, I'll tell you what, Harry, I think there's a case for much more coverage of Nigeria, including on this show. One of the problems we have is that we can very seldom establish a very clear line in order to discuss it. We must address this problem. Nonetheless, it's been marvelous for me. I hope it was for you. And if it was, join me again, God willing, next week at the same time.
Hello, just comment your name and the paper you that number. And just make sure that your television volume is set to 0. So
0, 0. Can you spell your name for me?
Yeah, I know. You can directly put through this, your phone number, and then we'll be back. Comment.
Can I have your telephone number?
Okay, so what's your name?